Are you curious about, interested in, or working within the field of anesthesiology, and you are a woman, person of color, or otherwise do not fit the stereotypical image of what an anesthesiologist looks like, then this is the podcast for you. We will discuss what life is like on the other side of the blue drape for us. Issues most relevant, such as what is anesthesia really? And we're not talking textbook definition. Tips for applying, success in residency, life as an attending, and beyond. Join us each week as we take a dive into this rich and often misunderstood field. This is your host, Dr. Alicia Peterson, and welcome to SIVO Sisters. This journey into medicine is a real trip, right? I mean, for the longest time, when you're a kid and growing up and people ask you, what is it that you want to do? You say doctor. And then that's usually enough for people to raise their eyebrows, say, oh, that's incredible. And then they pat you on the back and then they walk away. And so for the longest time, you're able to coast with just saying, I'm going to be a doctor. Then you get into medical school and you realize that, yeah, being a doctor isn't an adequate enough answer because there are so many different ways that a doctor can look. What I really appreciate about my interview with Dr. Amber Brooks in this part one, she highlights the key ingredients that she wanted in her medical practice. And we hear in her journey how all these pieces come together to form the delicious career that she has now. Please enjoy part one of my interview with the amazing Dr. Amber Brooks. It is my absolute pleasure to introduce Dr. Amber Brooks. I learned of Dr. Brooks from actually our mutual colleague. Right. So Brandon Williams was a co-anesthesia resident with me at WashU St. Louis. And when he went to Wake Forest, he said, yo, you're a pain medicine physician. You're a Black woman. I know someone who is bad. I mean, she's doing research. She's NIH funded. She's killing it in chronic pain clinic. I mean, anesthesiologist, yo, you got to get to know her. All right, I'm down, right? And then as life would have it, I actually meet Amber at a fellowship. Like, it's called a Mayday Fellowship for folks who are involved with pain to get involved with educating the lay public about it. I mean, she's really the full triple threat. She's an educator extraordinaire, vice chair of a DEI at Wake Forest. Dr. Brooks, feel free to share anything additional you'd want the audience to know. And then we want to get into your story.
Dr. Peterson, thank you so much for the really kind introduction, and was so glad to meet you at the Mayday Fellowship as well. As you know, our circles are really small. And so when I first became acquainted with Brandon, he said all of these wonderful things about you too. And then so for to have it come full circle at the Mayday Fellowship was really wonderful. And just want to start by just thanking you for creating this safe space for us to share our stories and to pave the path forward for others like us and for the next generation. And so, you know, I think my story is one of a road less traveled. So I knew from a very early age that I wanted to go into medicine, which for me was, you know, it was a calling. It was a purpose-driven calling. I have no one in my family, immediate or extended family, who are in the medical field. But I come from a generation of educators and and Black folks who understood that education was a really important path forward for upward mobility for Black folks. And so was always encouraged to pursue my dreams, even though no one else in my family was pursuing those same dreams. And to say that it has been challenging and difficult would be a real understatement. So I thought I was going to be an obstetrician gynecologist. I went to medical school with that in mind. And then I started doing my clinical rotations, and I completed my obstetrics gynecology rotation, and I knew it was just not, for a myriad of reasons, was not a best fit for me. And so at my medical school, I went to University of Iowa for medical school, and at my medical school at the time, anesthesia was an elective rotation. So you could choose from several different rotations. And one of my friends said, you should do anesthesia. They're really nice. They let you leave early. And it's an easy rotation. And I said, okay, great. I'm due for an easy rotation. So great. I'll choose anesthesia. So I went in with no expectations whatsoever. I knew nothing about what an anesthesiologist was, what they did. I had no idea. So I start the rotation, and the first thing I notice is that anesthesiologists were like really happy. They just loved what they were doing. They loved treating patients. They were so collegial. They worked as a team, and they were the leaders in the operating room and in the perioperative setting. And so I said, wow, this is really cool. And then it was just like the best of all worlds, right? They were doing things with their hands, whether it was placing IVs or doing intubations or other types of procedures. They had to be very knowledgeable, not only about pharmacology, but also physiology. So it was just like the best of all worlds. And I really like fell in love with anesthesia.
There's so much that you raised in that narrative that I just wanted to elaborate on a bit. Mm-hmm. One is that for some reason we think that since it's not in our family, that this isn't something that we would be good at, mm-hmm. as if medicine is inherited.
Right.
And it's like, no, it's a skill. And if you have the interest, then that means you should itch that interest and pursue it. But by
absolutely.
No means, not having someone in your family does not in any way disqualify you. And then you mentioned you went to Iowa. I'm like, how'd you get out there?
So listen. So I'm from the Chicago area originally. And Dr. Peterson asked me to speak about not only the accolades and the success, but also the tremendous challenges and difficulties that existed for me in my journey. And one of those was applying to medical school. I had decent grades, and in terms of my extracurricular activities and personal statement, those things I think were very strong, but where I really struggled was standardized tests. And so the MCAT gave me a lot of challenge, and I did not score well on the MCAT. Mm-hmm. But I have what I now call, when I see this in other applicants or other mentees, I had grit, and I just knew that I wanted to get into medical school and that I wasn't going to let the MCAT stop me. And so Northwestern, which was where I went to undergrad, had a fair in which they invited medical schools from around the country to meet applicants. And so I put on my suit, I put my resume together, and I went to every single table that was set up. And University of Iowa was not on my radar. And mm-hmm. I shared my story with the representatives that were there, and they urged me to apply. long story short, I got several interviews. I was waitlisted at University of Illinois at Chicago, and University of Iowa was my only acceptance. And so that's where I went. They had a very good program. They were known for primary care. And they also gave me a partial scholarship. And so I went.
Yeah. All you need is one yes.
And that's what I tell my mentees this all the time. Do not be discouraged. All you need is one program to say yes and to get your foot in the door. That's all you need. And so that's what happened with regards to medical school. And I, you know, I would just also add to something earlier you said, Dr. Peterson, was about, you know, itching that interest and that passion. For me, this is, you know, I knew that this was a calling on my life very early on. And so I wasn't going to let anything deter me from my ultimate goal, which was to get into medical school and eventually become a physician. So I envisioned myself as someone who was going to be working in the community, who was going to have relationships and rapport with my patients. And you don't get a whole lot of that in the operating room setting. It's a very fast-paced setting with a lot of turnover. Not many people even remember their anesthesiologist. And so I knew while I loved being in the operating room, I loved working in teams, I loved providing care to anesthetized patients, I also knew there was something missing. And so that is what led me to pursue a chronic pain management fellowship, because for better or worse, you have very good relationships with your patients over the year. You know this, Dr. Peterson, because you're a pain physician as well. And so for me, it was like the best of both worlds. I've been in settings over the years where I've fortunately been able to practice anesthesiology as well as chronic pain.
Yeah. And it looks like when you were going to medical school, you had it in your heart to do something with your hands and have that longitudinal relationship, but you didn't know about anesthesiology. You didn't know about pain. And so you just went with what you knew at the time, which was really OB-GYN. And I think that a lot of when you look at where a lot of Blacks and Browns end up practicing, I mean, you do see a lot of us in like OB-GYN fields. And so I think that it was great for you to early on address that was not for you, and then trip onto what now turns into, what you go into.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, that's why I kind of described this at the beginning of the podcast is really just, for me, it's been this road less traveled. I have been really fortunate and blessed to be able to pave my path and have my path go in a way that has allowed me to pursue passions that I didn't even know really existed, that were even available to me. And so that brings me to 2014. So 2014, we were really at the height of the prescription opioid crisis in this country. And practicing pain medicine was becoming very challenging. There were lots of things happening at the federal level, the state level, and even at the regional level that were changing the ways that we were able to manage our patients' chronic pain. And I found myself frustrated. And I also had like a lot of questions about things that were happening, but didn't have the tools to explore those questions. And so that led me down another road less traveled, and that was one of clinical research. So my clinical research is focused on older adults with chronic pain, with an emphasis on vulnerable populations, minority populations. And it, again, is a role least expected. And this is where I think having mentors around you, and in our specialty, sometimes those mentors don't look like us because they're just not that many of us in the field of anesthesiology, and especially not that many of us doing clinical research. And so that's where you have to be really open to receiving mentorship from others, even though sometimes you may not have a whole lot in common. But people who are passionate about mentoring come in all different colors, shapes, sizes, and fields. I have a variety of mentors for different reasons. I have a mentor for clinical research. I have a mentor for professional development. I have a peer mentor, so someone who is in internal medicine, colleagues who are in internal medicine, who serve as my peer mentors. And so that's where I just can't emphasize enough the importance of mentorship. And that's different from sponsorship. Sponsorship is someone who sits in a position of influence or power who may have access to opportunities or may be able to open doors for you that you cannot open for yourself. And so you need, in order to be successful, no matter what your occupation is, whether it's medicine or otherwise, you really need both. You need the mentorship and you need that sponsorship. And for those of us who are underrepresented in medicine, I think that oftentimes is the gap, the difference in experience that I see amongst my colleagues who don't look like me, who have mentors and sponsors, and those who look like me who don't have mentors and sponsors. It's a very important part of our ability to live out this calling, this passion, this purpose.
No, absolutely. Now, I mean, we all carry questions, right? But then it's like to actually lay it out into an investigation and know how to navigate getting funding. I mean, how did you come across mentorship there?
Absolutely. So I really fell into it again. It was my first or second week starting my new position at Wake Forest. I was previously on staff at University of Alabama at Birmingham. Mm-hmm. And I happened to be doing my onboarding training with another seasoned anesthesiologist in my department. We had to both go to this safety training. Mm-hmm. And long story short, she is a very well-established, very well-known researcher in aging research. Her research focuses on the aging heart. Her name is Dr. Leanne Groban. So she is the one who introduced me to this idea of not only clinical research, but research in aging populations. So she said, "Do you see older people in your chronic pain clinic?" And I said, "Well, absolutely." Because our population is aging so rapidly. We have, for the first time ever in our world's history, not just our country's history, we have more older adults than we do children under the age 5. So our baby bloomers are aging. And so I see lots of chronic pain patients who are older, and they're very complex. They're hard patients to treat sometimes because they have a lot of medical problems. And many of the medications that we use for other populations can't be used in older adults because of the age-related morbidities. And so she helped guide me towards a program sponsored by the NIH called the Butler Williams Scholar Program. And I will never forget, I looked at the application and it asked for what's called a specific aims page. And I had no idea what that is. Basically, it's a summary page for your grant application. And it's a concise one-page document that summarizes the who, what, where, when, and why of your project. But I had no idea what that was. And so I remember I sent a somewhat coy email to her, just a little bit embarrassed that I didn't know what it was. And I said, they're asking for this specific AIMS page, and I don't know what that is. Can you provide me an example? And she said, oh, no problem. She sent me several examples, and I used her specific AIMS page as a template. And long story short, I got accepted into the program. And it was a 2-week intensive on-site program in Bethesda, Maryland. And that was responsible, that experience and that training was responsible for helping launch my clinical research career.
Oh my gosh, that's beautiful. Things like that, the specific AIMS piece, that so many of us, if we don't have someone we can go to that we can trust to ask that question, the story would end right there, right?
Exactly, exactly. And that's why I can't overemphasize how important having mentors, and now being in a position that I can mentor others, I just want to just make this note, you know, mentoring and being a mentee is a two-way relationship. As faculty members, Dr. Peterson and I are extremely busy. And so it really is helpful if mentees can also show up prepared and knowing what they might want and need out of the relationship, that you are proactive about your needs and about pursuing the help, asking those questions that you may be embarrassed to ask, being courageous enough to go ahead and put ego and pride aside and just say, hey, I need some help here. I have had to do that multiple times over, throughout my career. And it's being, vulnerable, and asking for help and pursuing that help, being proactive, that has really, for me, been very, very beneficial, in helping me get to where I am today.
I am secretly doing backflips because I literally am going to have an episode dedicated to how mentees should approach people that they would like to have mentor them, because it's exactly right. I mean, it's a relationship that requires two interested parties.
Right.
So definitely this is a dedicated episode. And as you mentioned, you know, you saw the difference between those who have mentors and those who have not. And often in academics, it comes out in who gets promoted and who doesn't.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The differences are striking. I heard a recent statistic that there are only 300 full professors, African-American female professors in the country. And this was coming from my friend who is an internal medicine doctor. And I said, oh, you mean just internal medicine?
Right, she right.
Said, she said, no, like across the country in every specialty, there are only 300 African-American, Black, female full professors. And that statistic has just stayed with me. I mean, in 2022, that's the state of affairs. And so I strongly believe that that mentorship and sponsorship is key to promotion and advancement in academic medicine. Without those two things, you're not going to be as successful as our counterparts. So it's so important. And I would add that mentorship doesn't have to be at your own institution. I have mentors within my institution and outside of my institution that I've met at national meetings like American Society of Anesthesiology or pain medicine meetings over the years.
Life is not going to go as planned, and that's actually not a bad thing. I mean, Dr. Brooks went into medical school thinking that she was going to do OB-GYN and was open enough to a new experience of trying a specialty that she'd never even heard of before. And it ended up being one of the best things she could have done. She is an academic anesthesiologist who initially had difficulties getting into medical school due to an MCAT. So for all you out there who's beating up yourself because you don't test well, it's okay. There are many, many prominent leaders in academics who did not do well on their exams. And it by no means diminishes their credibility or the contributions they have made into the field. By developing relationships, Dr. Brooks was able to navigate that MCAT obstacle. And speaking of relationships, we see again the importance of mentorship. At the time of that recording, I did not yet record the mentorship episode. Please see season 2, episode 5 for the dedicated topic on mentorship. Please tune in to part 2. I hope you enjoyed this episode of SIVO Sisters. If you love this episode as much as I did, head on over and rate and subscribe so you don't miss out. New episodes drop every week on a Monday because we all can use a little something, something to get us through the week. Am I right? I'd love to hear more from you on the topics that you want to hear. So let me know in the comments. This is Dr. Peterson signing off. See you next time.